For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Confederations Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Confederations Cup. Close your eyes and squint hard enough and it's a bit like a proper World Cup. Close your eyes and squint hard enough and this is a bit like a proper roundup with today opening day action. Brazilians leave Japan feeling tender after tearing strips off them. We marvel at that terrific opening goal from Lemar and scratch our heads over what's going to happen on Sunday as Italy face Mexico and world champion Spain play Uruguay. All of that in this inaugural Confederations Cup Football Daily. Well, here we go then. Day one of the Confederations Cup, the only tournament in world sport that brings you Tahiti and Spain very much in the same package. And Ian McIntosh and Paul Doyle very much in our presentation. Paul, it's been a while.
Hi, James.
Hi. Is that all you got?
That's all.
Months later, you roll in.
Look at the time.
Yeah, exactly. Ian, lovely to have you with us as well.
Thank you very much for having
me. Great.
Outside, all of London is in pubs and clubs and falling over itself drunk, and we're here flying the flag for the Guardian.
Yeah, yeah, but very, very much a privilege to be witness to this terrific in patches opening game to the tournament. It certainly started with a blast, did it not, Paul?
Yes, it did. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was an enjoyable game, and as you say, featured three really great goals, including that early one from Neymar, who's living up to the hype. I know a lot of people already, there's already a backlash against him at this stage, but he looked really good tonight. I thought he looked better tonight than he did against England when he was guilty of being a bit over-elaborate. Mm. And ironically, given that he scored with a great shot today, he tried that about 10 times against England and never got close. Mm. So it was fun.
It certainly was, and the Paulinho with the second, and then that terrific move by Oscar setting up Joe for the third.
Yeah, Oscar's done very well out of Neymar, I think, because you have all of the attention on Neymar. He's the golden boy, the one with the future of Brazilian football at his feet, but actually Oscar's the one who's just consistently excellent, always the best player on the pitch, and after 68 games for club and country this season, how he's still got the energy in the 93rd minute of this one to run pretty much the length of the pitch and play a perfect pass. The man must have lungs like buckets.
Mm, indeed so. Mm. Although where he foots them, I'm not entirely sure.
Well, I know
there might be more buckets. Of course, it's a rare competitive game, this one, for Brazil. Coming at the end of a good couple of weeks.
And that's interesting because the last competitive game that the senior team played, obviously, was 2 years ago. But the last competitive game that a lot of these guys played was in the Olympics last year when there was enormous pressure on them. And they didn't handle it particularly well, and they kind of flopped in that tournament. But it shows how a very young team is maturing quite nicely. Because there was a performance that may have lacked a little bit of flair compared to, you know, the great Brazilian teams of the past. But they managed the performance very well, and they squeezed the life out of the game.
They seem to have overcome the old problem they had under Mano Menezes, where they were very much two teams wearing the same shirt. There were your defensive block and your attacking block, and never the twain should meet. They're very easy to get on the break. But in this game, Neymar and Hulk were, you know, Neymar wasn't exactly tackling back, but he was at least moving back and filling a void, whereas Hulk was working hard up and down the right flank. It seems like Scolari is beginning to make them understand what's required of them if they are going to win the World Cup, which, of course, is what he said they would do when he took over.
Right. He's rescued them from the sloughs of despondency once before in 2002 and did exactly that.
Yeah.
And does seem to be very much on track with this one, with all the pre-tournament reports about what a terrible state they were in and lying all the way down in 22nd place in the FIFA World Rankings.
Yeah, which will be largely because they haven't played the competitive games to pick up the points. But, I mean, they were pretty abject as well. I think there was they'd had seven games, they'd only won one, and that was against Bolivia. And it wasn't a vintage year for Bolivia. But he does seem to be getting round those traditional weaknesses. And when he took over, he didn't make any bones about it. He said, this is not a nation who should be pushing for second, third or fourth. You know, we have to win it. So if there wasn't enough pressure on himself already, really intensified it.
Right. Japan, though, is that why Brazil looked so good?
Possibly. Japan weren't able to match them physically, and they were muscled off the ball a lot, which is a perennial problem for Japan. But they, other than that, they're a very good team. Technically very good, very clever. And they'll cause a lot of teams problems, including even in this tournament. They could, they still have to face Italy and Mexico, and they could conceivably beat both of them and go through. Clearly, Japanese football, most of their, I think their entire starting 11 tonight, except Endo, plays in Europe for very good teams in the Bundesliga, Serie A, Kagawa, Man United, things like that. Whereas at the last World Cup, they only had four players in the entire squad playing in Europe. So they're clearly on the rise.
Well, they were desperately boring in the last World Cup as well, weren't they? That game against Paraguay goes down as one of the worst I've ever seen in my life. And you certainly couldn't accuse them of that. I felt a little sorry for them, really. It wasn't a 3-0 kind of game. With a little more luck and a decent striker, they could have got into that, particularly the way the Brazilians play their fullbacks as wingers, and there's so much space behind them that a team like Japan can capitalise on that, but nothing really fell for them. And I think it was John Durden, the Asian expert in the press, was saying that they would be a top eight team if they had a proper world-class centre-forward, which on this evidence they didn't seem to have. They're playing Okazaki up there for the first time in a while. Now he's scored 1 in 2 for Japan, but it wasn't one of his best nights.
Hmm. It's interesting you say it wasn't really a 3-0 performance from Japan, a 3-0 defeat performance, but equally Brazil could have had plenty more. They went close at a lot of other occasions.
There was one very good save from Kawashima, but there was also a period in the first 20-30 minutes where Endo and Honda in particular were carving out countless opportunities. It could never quite be called a clear-cut chance, apart from that one early on where I think Honda lashed one over the bar from about 2 yards out, which takes a special kind of talent.
Certainly does. Certainly does. Now, speaking of particular kind of talent, how about we hear from Fernando Duarte, our man embedded, hopefully, very, very deep into the heart of the Brazilian Seleção. He was at the game tonight, and he joins us now on line one. Fernando, great to hear you on a very special evening. There you were at the opening game of the Confederations Cup.
Hello, James. Hello, guys. It was really emotional, I must say. When the national anthem was playing, the stadium was packed, and, you know, that whole feeling, okay, it's actually happening. We are having a test event for the World Cup. Football has definitely come home, that kind of stuff. And it was a very overwhelming feeling. However, I must say I was a bit sad as well because of what happened outside the pitch. You must have heard of it. Several protesters clashed with police. They wanted to protest against the cost of the World Cup, against how much money was poured into the tournament and how much little money is being poured into health and education in Brazil. And the police lost a bit of its coolness, especially because yesterday there was a protest when people burned tires outside the stadium. So the cops today, the shock police, was really kind of like non-tolerant, and that marred the occasion, unfortunately.
Do you think there's going to be more of that as the next 2 weeks go on?
I think so, James. There have been protests all over the country, in Rio and São Paulo, people protesting about the train fares and, sorry, bus fares, something that I wish it happened in England as well. It got a bit ugly. The police once again lost its hand and started like shooting rubber bullets and tear gas. It happened in Brazil as well. So that might be a reaction, that there might be some developments and other games might have protests. I must say this, a lot of people in Brazil are not anti-World Cup. They just think that some of the coverage and some of the whole tournament hullabaloo is not taken into account the problems of the country.
Right. Absolutely. Now, in the meantime, there's been a lot of concerns coming into this tournament with the level of this current Brazil side. But after that performance, what do you think the mood's going to be like?
The crowd was really happy today. It's a neutral crowd, right? Brasilia, although there were people from outside Brasilia, whenever you get out of the big south, as we say, crowds are much more tolerant. That's why Brazil is going to play in the northeast the next two games, the one against Mexico in Fortaleza and the one against Italy in Salvador, which are in the northeast of the country, as you, James, know really well. I think the crowd has to be a bit happy. 3-0, Neymar scored a screamer, his first goal in 9 matches. By the way, he was almost 900 minutes in a dry spell. So there were reasons to cheer. Also, I think that some supporters lost a bit of their patience with the pragmatism of the side sometimes. You could see that they wanted more goals. So they were asking for Lucas Moura since, 10 minutes, which I think is a bit unfair to hope. But overall, I think it was a decent performance, especially with all the chitters going around. I mean, it could be a tough match. The only two times Japan didn't lose to Brazil were in Confederation Cup games. So I think it was a pretty interesting game to win. Mexico will be tough though on Wednesday.
Right, it'd be interesting to see. Do you think Scolari's going to line his team up the same way? He had the fullbacks pushing on quite so much against Mexico, or will he be a little bit more cautious in that match?
Really, he enjoys it. He enjoys the way the fullbacks play. He'd be talking about Marcelo, saying that Marcelo is almost like a midfielder because he doesn't use the line for crosses, and neither does Alves. So he likes this kind of like catching inside midfielders, which is why he's been trying to get the defenses set up so well in midfield. Let me also tell you that he's been practicing a back three, so he could draft Dante into the as a centre back and use Davi as a kind of like sweeper, or even perhaps as a defensive midfielder. So I think he needs to give Mexico a good game. It's important for Brazil because Mexico have been Brazil's bogeyman in the last few weeks. So I really think he's gonna go for it. There's no other way. He has to use his fullbacks. He hasn't got enough defensive fullbacks. Let me just say that. The reserve right back is actually a midfielder, Jean, who plays for Fluminense. Alves has got no substitute. So I think he's going to probably reinforce the midfield a lot and perhaps even bring in a back three in a way to try to contain Mexico.
All right. Why has Neymar got Neymar Junior on the back of his shirt?
His father's called Neymar.
Right.
His father always called him Junior. But I think there's some branding issues coming around. Because when you see him in TV commercials and other assorted publicity things, he's always called Neymar Jr. Uh-huh. He's only the press and the other players that call him Neymar. Even his shirt in Barcelona was Neymar Jr. So I think they're kind of like going for that. His father is his agent as well. So you see that the guy's a big influence.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and the boos for Blatter, was he collateral damage in that? Was it the fact that he was standing next to President Dilma? Or was it actually a travelling anti-Blatter squad?
Well, I don't really think this. The more than 5,000 people amongst those 68,000 people knew who Josep Blatter is.
Really?
Dilma was the main target for that. They all just saw this old man back there. And in Brazil, we boo everybody when they're going to do official announcements in stadiums. I mean, a famous writer used to say the Brazilians boo even a minute of silence. So it was a very strong statement against the government and against President Dilma. And Blatter, bless him, he was actually right to try to calm people down, but he sounded so patronizing that I think that the boos were louder for him as well. It's something that people are going to have to get used with. This is a different country. This is a different culture. I don't think it's nice to boo the president. But what can I say? If she's that popular, she's not getting the boos, is she?
Yeah, that's true. I don't see anything wrong with it at all. Kick over those statues, Brazilian friends. Right. Fernando, that's brilliant. Terrific start then for Scolari. A second straight 3-0 for him. And lots of fun to come. Fernando, we hope to catch up with you early next week.
It will be a pleasure as usual. I miss you guys in a very macho and heterosexual way. So see you guys soon.
However you want to miss us is good with us, Fernando. Bye for now. Right, well, I tell you what, the fun doesn't stop in Brazil, famously indeed. The two terrific matches coming up on the Sunday, day two of Confederations Cup, one of which features, the first official game at the new Maracanã. It's only Italy-Mexico. How exciting is that, Ian?
It's extraordinarily exciting.
Right, go on. Well, Mexico,
you
mentioned
want more, aren't you?
The Olympics you mentioned before, Paul, because the Mexicans, they only went and won that thing.
Yeah.
Good.
And their main goal-getter
in
that tournament, Uribe.
He's not there.
He's not there. So everything falls on to Javier Hernandez, as it has done recently, and he hasn't been quite able to carry the whole team on his shoulders, So which is why they're struggling even to get to the next World Cup. I think they're third in the CONCACAF group. And they haven't scored many goals.
Mm, indeed so. Having said that, they're playing an Italy team which really seems to be struggling with the whole concept of actually playing a tournament in June. I'm not sure. Was it the last tournament that they had in South America that they... Oh, no. In South America was quite possibly the World Cup in 1950 when they came by boat because they didn't want to risk air transport after the Superga disaster. I'm sure we told the story lots of times and spent 3 weeks on the cruise getting so fat that they basically got knocked out without troubling the opponent.
Didn't that stop along the way down and pick up two or three other teams as well?
But very possibly,
pretty much half the competition was
But it was
on
a mark
boat.
Of how badly they did that they were allowed to fly back. but they've started off on this trip with a
draw against Haiti.
Exactly, of all people. Yeah. So, in which Balotelli picked up a red card, so there's all sorts of question marks about whether the problems continue for him? And El Shaarawy's not been doing well. He's got a bit of an ankle knock. And there do seem to be questions over their mentality, how much they're actually up for this tournament, which is a surprise, because I would have thought they'd be desperate to redeem themselves a bit after the shambles they made at the last Confederations Cup.
Well, they were saying they didn't take it seriously. Mm. They just saw it as an end-of-season jolly, and had they taken it seriously and picked up some useful experience, they might have done rather better in the actual tournament a year later, which, of course, they exited very quickly.
Didn't they, though? All right. Well, anyway, so they were complaining a little bit about the heat in the game against Haiti. Possibly they will have acclimatised a little bit better by the time they take on the Mexicans in the game, which completes Group A, of course. Top two teams will go through to the knockout stages. And also on Sunday, Spain-Uruguay. Hey, speaking of the Spanish, did you see Isco's goal for the under-21s?
Wasn't it wonderful?
It was wonderful.
Fall to the ground and rub your thighs. That's how good it was.
Did you prefer that one or any three of the Brazil girls tonight?
I preferred the Isco one. There's just something about the way he sells that dummy, and two defenders go streaking past him and off screen. Right. And then he toe pokes it into the top corner.
And then it's got a toe poke at the end. I think that's the key thing. Have you seen this, Paul?
I haven't seen it.
You're too busy working?
Yeah.
You've got it in your head now because Ian's just described it. Yep. He dinks inside.
Have I made it sound like a sexual act? Because that's how it felt. Just watching.
He slips inside and then thrusts it home. He does. Well, there you go. So that's Spain, the under-21s. They look terrific. Mm. Some people asking how many senior teams that under-21 side could beat. Plenty.
It does look that way. Did you see the clip of them earlier on in the tournament? I can't remember who it was against, but all they had to do was just kick it out of their own half. They were under pressure from a throw-in, very near their own penalty area, and an English team would have just thumped it into the night sky. And Spain, being Spain, instead, and inside about 10 seconds, played 18 quick passes to feet and then just slipped out onto the wing and off for another attack. Mm. It was the most gorgeous way of clearing your lines I've ever seen.
Passanacho, they call it.
Do they? Yeah. That sounds lovely.
Mm. Uruguay, they could be quite exciting too. Although they're another team that's having trouble with the whole World Cup qualification business. 5 points adrift of that crucial fifth-place playoff spot.
I think they're a little closer now because they will be Venezuela.
Oh, after Venezuela?
Yeah.
Are they? All right.
With Cavani scoring the goal, and he was deployed in the position that Luis Suarez has occupied with to great effect in the tournament so far, but that's where Cavani would like to play more regularly, but because of Suarez is excellent, he doesn't get to, and that's the one problem that Uruguay haven't quite been able to resolve, is how to get their two world-class strikers firing together.
Do they play with Forlan up front as well still?
Yeah. And Gaston Ramirez of Southampton could be the man to link midfield and all these attackers in a way that will get them back into the top four, even in South America.
They've really struggled, haven't they? Because I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think it was about six games that they went without actually winning. Mm-hmm. And they weren't even in a playoff position. Mm. They looked like they wouldn't even get that much. And it was nice to see Oscar Tabarez reach for the old cliche of, we have to treat every remaining game as a cup final.
A cup final,
yeah.
Interesting.
So even in Uruguay, that one wheeled out.
I don't know why. There's Spain, you know, with teams that can actually score goals. Sometimes it can trouble. The Spanish, and certainly when you think of your fellow Ramirez there and Suarez and of course Cavani. Well, that's going to be an extraordinary matchup. Rather more goals in that one, you'd think, than the Italy-Mexico game, although football, who can say? Who can say? Very good. Well, that's coming out on Sunday. It being a late one, we'll wait until Monday morning before bringing you our considered thoughts on those games, and a look forward to Monday's action, which, I'm not wrong, involves the debut in this tournament, and possibly any tournament ever, of Tahiti. Quick fun fact about Tahiti, Ian?
They have just one professional footballer, and he's 33. Everyone else is an amateur.
All right. Did you know that there are more hotel rooms in the average Las Vegas hotel than there are in the entirety of French Polynesia? I tell you what, we're on a roll with these Tahiti facts. Here's another. Bora Bora is in French Polynesia, but the letter B doesn't exist in their alphabet.
So it's Ora Ora?
I really don't know. But maybe we'll have the answer to that in Monday's very special edition of Confederations Cup Football Daily. There you go. Terrific. Thanks very much for stopping by tonight, Paul.
Pleasure.
And you, Ian McIntosh.
Thank you for having me.
And you, producer Ben. And you, listeners. Speak to you Monday.
CCFD with AC Jimbo. Worth.